Committee will come to order. There's a quorum. Representative Cass, would you like to meet to do the minutes?
So moved.
Representative Cass moves the minutes of February 9th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Minutes are approved. House File 510. Welcome to my committee, Representative. I'll move House File 510 be recommended pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
And Madam Chair, then I believe there's an A1 amendment. Do you have that? Well, I was saying do an oral for you, too.
I've got a new one.
Yeah,
I've
got one.
All right.
Well, I'll move the A2 amendment. All those in favor?
Madam Chair, I don't have an A2. What's that? Before you move an amendment to my bill, can I know what it is?
I've got an A1 and an A2.
All right.
You want to explain it, please, Colby?
Yes, Madam Chair and members, the A2 incorporates the language in the A1, so if we do A2, we essentially get them both.
I guess it's technical.
Okay. So, again, the A2 amendment, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Madam Chair and members, House File 510 is a department bill brought to me by them, and they are here to explain their bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Greg Bozicki. I'm the Division Director for the Pepline Fertilizer Management Division at the Department of Agriculture. If you would like, I will briefly walk through the bills, and if there's questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
That'd be great.
Madam Chair and members, this is a department bill. It addresses two issues that the department has responsibility for, the waste pesticide collection program and the fertilizer law. The first amendment, the waste pesticide collection is the first issue. I think it's found in sections 1 and 2, and it does two things. It provides the commissioner with authority to, under certain and unusual circumstances, to limit pesticide disposal, and it corrects the second thing is it corrects a technical error from last year's amendments that will make record keeping easier. And section 1 is intended to reinstate the authority that the department had prior to last year's changes, in which the department had the authority to limit pesticides being brought in under unusual circumstances. It doesn't happen very often, but it does happen occasionally. And what we had prior to the changes was a rule that allowed us to charge for waste pesticide that would be brought in to the department or to a facility above 300 pounds, we would charge $3 per pound, and above 1,000 pounds, we would charge $4 per pound. That was in the rule. That's the way we had it set up. That rule is no longer in effect because of the change in the law, but that's to tell the committee, inform the committee on how we handled that in the past. This year when we were doing our collections in a county, we had about 20,000 pounds of virtually brand new pesticide. Most of it was pesticide. Most of it was on pallets and shrink wrap. Brought to our collection site, and our understanding is that material was brought in because of a purchase agreement in which this material could no longer be used in the retailer's area. First of all, it was on very short notice, which created one problem for us, but more importantly, we disposed of that and we had no way to charge for that, even a reasonable amount of disposal, or to discourage that kind of brand new material from being disposed of through the state-funded program. So that is what is in Section 1, and it simply reverts back to the language that we previously had. I would also state that we don't know what all the circumstances might be, so without having any ability to not to reject waste pesticides, there may be some very unusual, unforeseen circumstance in which we would have many, many thousands of pounds being brought in, and it would be a financial problem for us. Section 2 is a very simple amendment. Basically, I think this was the intent last year. And this is where the amendment is, if I'm not mistaken. Last year, the language read to provide information or the EPA number. If the EPA number is provided to us, we can gather a lot of information from that. So we would like that to be basically an either-or situation is fine with us. And that was the intent. I think the language reads a little, that's the net result of that language. However, we would want to make sure that we do get quantities as well. So quantities plus the EPA number, quantities without, but a description of. So those are sections 1 and 2. The next points of the bill deal with the fertilizer law. And very simply, this language, which I'd be happy to go through, but maybe the simplest thing would be just to explain that the current law requires tonnage fees, the tonnage tax, as it's commonly called, to be paid to the department. That tonnage tax is paid by the first seller into the state. That creates some confusion. And what we would like to do is revert back to the way the language used to read, and in fact reads for most other states, if not all, that the last seller of the fertilizer to the farmer or to the licensed commercial applicator, the person who makes that final sale would pay the fee. Now, already all of those folks, whether you're at the top of the distribution chain or at the bottom, have to file a report with us. We receive about 800 reports twice per year. What we're proposing is that people just report to us once, and that the person at the lower end of the distribution would pay the fee. The reason for this, very simply, is that there is a lot of confusion once the product gets down to that final sale as to who has paid the fee. So we believe that we could have a simpler process like is in all the other states, or most all the other states, and we could have a level playing field and accomplish our task that way of collection of fees. We also think it would be appropriate to reduce it from twice a year reporting to once. And then we're asking the late fee to be increased from $25 to $50. That's simply a minor adjustment to discourage late reporting. That is what the language does. The description in Section 5 is the new language on who pays the fees. The remainder is language that implements what I just described. So, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you or your committee members have. Though.
Thank you. Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions for you. My concern with the first part is the commissioner may not limit, or may now limit, the type and quantity of waste pesticides. If somebody comes in, you know, or they've got a bunch, what assurance do we have that you just will lower those limits to a point that the program really doesn't do any good anymore?
Mr. Brzezinski?
Madam Chair, Representative Faust, I guess the only thing that I would say is that we've run this as one of the best programs in the country for a number of years, and we haven't implemented
you know, such a program. We spent a lot of time on the waste pesticide collection through various task forces, and the language changes last year. We've got one of the best programs in the country. So if there would be a need for an amendment to clarify that that's not the intention, that would be fine. We would be happy to work with you on that. I would only say that this language had been in the program for years, and we hadn't implemented that fashion.
All right. I do have another question. I also have a question on bottom of page 2. The tonnage report is not required to be submitted if they by a licensee who distributes fertilizer solely by custom application. Does that mean that if somebody is not charging for the fertilizer, all they're charging for is a $10 an acre to apply the product? Is that what we're saying, that that person doesn't have to collect or file the report?
Madam Chair, Representative Faust, yes. The intention of that language is to address like a licensed lawn care applicator or those individuals, and frankly, I'm not sure there's many of them, but those individuals who they're only doing is custom applying. They're not buying and storing the material. So that was the intention. What we've done is say if you're we've constructed it so that if you're selling it from one licensed person to another, and the easiest way to think of this is two retailers, they're both licensed, then it only becomes the person who sells it to the grower that pays the fee, because there's a lot of fertilizer that goes back and forth between various licensed people. So it would be very easy to say, well, it's only to the unlicensed person, but then we also know that there's such things as urban lawn care companies, and the fees have already been paid by someone, so that's actually the end user. If you can imagine a school teacher who applies fertilizer during the summer, that fee has been paid from the local co-op or whoever's selling them that fertilizer, because that licensed person, that exception, would actually be the end user. It wouldn't be a grower or a homeowner.
Okay, quick follow-up.
Representative Faust.
Thank you. So if there's a custom applicator out there, and I know situations where this is the case, where the custom applicator doesn't build the fertilizer, just the application, he would fit into this as well.
Madam Chair, Representative Faust, that's correct. He would be exempted.
All right. Thank you.
That's correct. That's the intention.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and apologize for stepping out. So hopefully this wasn't asked already. But the changes that were made on the front page, line 11, 1.11, where we stricken the word not on both those paragraphs, and I understand the reasoning behind it. Would this prohibit or would this allow the commissioner to reject anything in-state or charge a fee to farmers or anything in-state as well?
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, it may, but it's certainly not the intent to put a surcharge on farmers. What we were thinking is that we would actually go back to what we had before, go through a rule writing process, work with the various parties involved to make sure that the unusual circumstance was addressed. One of the things that what we are there's some concern, especially by staff, that we just don't become a business disposal subsidy for not for waste pesticide, but for something that a company might say, well, I'm not going to be selling this stuff anymore, and it's cheaper just for me to give it to the state than it is to ship it back to the registrant or something crazy like that.
And Madam Chair, maybe I can add to this bill's coming to our committee, and we are going to, for those of you that are on that committee, we're going to start talking about the pesticide division next Wednesday, and a lot of these issues, we're going to have a report on the county waste pesticide collection, because we're the ones that get to set the fees for that and other things. And then maybe we'll get more detail from Mr. Bezicki, and the counties came at late here with a concern, and we certainly want to address that, because remember, the people that pay those fees are the manufacturers and the labelers of that product.
And so, you know, the situation that Mr. Bozicki described is certainly one. If you get a 20-ton semi full of brand-new product, certainly the manufacturer would want that back and not pay the fee to dispose of it, because they're the ones paying it. And likewise, in Representative Eakin and some of our border districts, at times we have truckloads of product coming from North or South Dakota. And if a county makes a mistake and takes it, it just shouldn't happen. We're going to bill North Dakota, or we're going to bill that grower or retailer who brought it over the border to have us dispose of it. So they have to have some way to limit those types of situations and say, no, wait a minute, we're not paying for that. We have that in the past in statute, and it was done by the rulemaking process. If we don't do it that way, what we do is come back every year when anything like this happens, and then we'd add a list in the bill on what they can exclude the next year, but that'll be after we paid for it. So it is kind of a, at this point it's a trust me thing, but they have done it that way before, and if we require them to go into the rulemaking process on it, then that would be the input for the counties and everyone else in that process without us prescribing it in law.
I'm sure.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Junkie, what I'd like to do is visit with you a little more when this moves into your committee, because the fear, I think, would be the commissioner saying, okay, now we can assess a fee to local farmers and stuff like that, or not accept, you know, their pesticides. So I'll visit with you a little more.
All right.
Thank you.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My questions, there are two questions I'd like to ask, if I may. And the first deals on this subject as well, and, you know, this kind of dovetailing with Representative Hamilton's question of, you know, the commissioner has the authority, he may assess and so forth. And my concern is that if we put this in statute without some qualifiers, that a future administration may come along and say, you know, well, now we can charge fees and we can collect or restrict how much we collect and so forth. So I guess, you know, as this bill moves on, I'd like to see that addressed, that, we write a statute that, it's good for the long term. And so the other question I have deals on page 2, the tonnage report on fertilizer. Yeah, and perhaps this bill just deals with the report. You talked, Mr. Bozicki, about the fees paid. And currently it's paid by the first entity that acquires the fertilizer in the state, and you will be changing it to the end user, paying the fee.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's correct.
Okay. My question then is for an overlap, or is there product in storage already that the fee's already been paid? That if it's sold this spring, will the end user be paying a fee again on the same tonnage?
Madam Chair, Representative, after a lot of discussion with my staff and going back and forth, that's the first time this has come up. That would not be the intent that there would be overlap. We did talk about the implementation date. It would go into effect in July 1st, assuming, and so the first report would actually be a year from this July. That's when they would be paying the fees. We'd be happy to work, develop an amendment if you would like to make it clear that if the fee has already been paid, it need not be paid again. And so there wasn't that intention, but I can see how that could be a problem.
All right. I just wanted to bring that issue forward. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and this may have already been addressed, but I want to express the concern that I have that, you know, costs not be passed on or increased to our farmers, or kept at a minimum. But so a concern that I have, and just wanted to raise that.
Sure. I almost said you were a rep, Mr. Bozicki.
And again, Madam Chair, maybe again I'll just repeat why I said the manufacturer and the labeler of the product pays for it. The farmers do pay for it. So we do want to give them the ability to reject some of these things, or it will go on the farmers. It's the other way around too. They will pay for it if we pay the disposal. Eventually the user of that pesticide passing through from the manufacturer pays for it. So We do have to figure out the comfort language for anyone that needs it, and I'm sure Mr. Colby is going to be diligently working on that over the next week here and have an answer for us. But the other way, too, we'll pay for it if they can't reject those loans.
And Madam Chair, Representative Rudolph, that's our intention right now. It's pretty open-ended. If someone showed up with 1 million pounds of waste pesticide, I would have no way to say, I'm not going to take that. It could come from California. So that's our intention, is to basically be very judicious, not pass on, but still do the job.
Any other questions? The only piece that I have is I'm not a fan of rules. It's hard to get them out of once they're there, and so I prefer to see us do something in statute. There is somebody in the audience that would like to talk. Annalee Barlett. Thank you. I'm not sure I said it right, but
good enough.
Well,
you were there. Madam Chair, my name is Annalee Garlis, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties, and I also work with the Solid Waste Administrators Association. For the past few years, I've been working very closely with Department of Ag and with Representative Dunkey on the issue of waste pesticides. And the piece that I wanted to just bring up, just to raise as an issue before the committee, was already touched on by about 3 or 4 of you. And Representative Dunkey has indicated that he'd be willing to work on this with me. And it is that piece in section 1 where it says the commissioner may limit the type and quantity of waste pesticides. Right now in the state, there are counties that contract with the Department of Ag to take on the collection of waste pesticides that come into their facilities. And I'm not certain the number of counties that are doing this right now, but there are some that have decided that they won't be contracting with the state, and then the state will come out and do, as it indicates in Section 2, at least 1 collection event in each of these counties per year. The counties that have a contract with the state are concerned about this language, because if they're collecting this on an ongoing basis throughout the year, they don't want to have to face the Department of Ag coming and saying, we'll take these pesticides but not these other ones that came in, and then the county would be responsible for this other set. And I know Mr. Vizicki said that it hasn't happened that way in the past, and I was not aware of the large amount that came in, the 20,000 pounds that came in from North Dakota. But there's also nothing in here that says that the Commissioner of Ag wouldn't be able to tell a county that has been collecting this at no cost to people bringing it in that the county is just responsible for it. So we do want to make sure, and I'll be working with Representative Dunkey on this particular language, to make sure that the county wouldn't be left holding onto a bunch of pesticides that they brought in under a contract.
Representative Hamilton.
Madam Chair, just justifier, do you think it could be something as simple as adding the words out of state after limit? So it just refers to out of state pesticides?
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, I would be definitely willing to put it, clearly counties don't want to be collecting stuff from out of state, but if the department also wanted to put something on there about certain quantities, because the 20,000 is a significant amount.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, that would address one situation, but we could have pesticides from in-state. Again, like I say, if you get a semi-load of brand new product that you got a dispute between a buyer and a distributor, and they said, fine, I'm just taking in the collection point. Have a nice day. And they're done. And why would we want to dispose of that? You know, that could happen in this state, too. So it's not necessarily all out-of-state product. Or, as as Vizicki said, we don't want to become a dumping ground for in-state manufactured product too. You know, 3M finds another site, digs it up, brings it into our county waste pesticides. Take care of it. Wait a minute, we're not going to do that. time out, and you have to have the commissioner be able to limit those types of situations. So it could be in state, it could be out of state. I don't think we have the language yet.
All right. That's it.
Representative Hamilton.
Well, it just comes back to our initial conversation. We'll work with you.
Hold or taking
chair.
Care of it.
All right, Goldie.
Are there anybody else that wants to?
Bill Bond wants to talk, it looks
like. Oh, okay.
Only if he's for the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bill Bond with Minnesota Crop Production Retailers, and we are not opposing the bill, Representative Duffy.
Proceed.
Thank you. We understand that the department is clearing up a problem in that the way that the fertilizer fee is currently structured, it is confusing. And we're for initiatives that would clarify and make a level playing field on in that regard, and I think that this bill takes a step in doing that. I think I would, in talking with Mr. Bezicki, it might have been my predecessor that came up with this initiative in the first place, so we're probably changing something that was initiated years ago. It appears to be a sensible solution, and we'll have other comments along the way, but this appears to make sense.
Thank you. I will renew my motion that the House File 510 be amended, recommended to pass, and referring to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
No.
Motion. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would like to move House File 598 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Representative Egan renews his motion. Oh, and on the General Register. Okay.
So, and Madam Chair and members, this is a technical amendment, it deals with nursery stock. There are nursery stock plants that have been sold as dormant stock. And unfortunately, many times this stock was not maintained adequately, and the plant viability and survival has been low in some of them. And this is designed to correct that problem. It proposes to clarify definitions regarding this dormant stock and require that the material must be properly maintained to protect its viability. Nursery stock dealers is added to the nursery stock certificate requirements in this bill. One other small change is that annual certificate renewals must be postmarked by the end of the year instead of by January 1st, and this just allows for possible mail delivery delays, which oftentimes happens around the first of the year during the New Year's season. And that actually brings it into compliance with the way they handle certificates for other things. So it's really just making it follow along with common practice already. This bill is also supported by the Minnesota Nursery Advisory Committee and the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association. And I also have with me today the Plant Protection Division Director, Mr. Geir Friso, from the Department of Agriculture, who would also speak to the bill.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Geir Friso. I'm Director of the Plant Protection Division. I think Representative Eakin has already covered most of the bill very well. It's primarily a response to a growing complaint that the department has received regarding dormant stock, and those of you that have been to large box stores and lumber stores may have seen boxes or plastic bags with plants, and normally those plants are very perfectly good plants, viable plants, but what's been happening more and more is these dormant stock is showing up earlier and earlier each year and coming from southern states, and by the time the ground unfreezes in Minnesota, that many times people are buying dead stock. So this is very much a consumer protection a change, and we think it's to the benefit of consumers who buy nursery stock. We've worked very hard the last 2-3 years to inform box stores and folks selling these sorts of plants how they can do a better job in maintaining this stock, but we wanted to clarify the statutes, clarify the definitions, and provide some additional guidance.
Are there any questions or comments? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Eakin, is there any additional cost to growers or dealers at all?
Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, I do not believe that there is any cost associated at all with this change.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Representative Eakin?
Madam Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 598 be recommended passed.
And placed on the general register.
And placed on the general register. Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, we'll now be listening to House File 280 and Representative Tremba. I assume you want to move your bill and recommend refer it to the Committee on Finance. Is that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Go ahead and present your bill.
I move
I've already moved the bill.
Okay. Well, I've had this bill, like I think, for about 8 years, and every year I would not win. And last year we did win, and then for some reason the department decided that it had to go in front of the federal CDM. So we went through the process, and we were denied. And I was disappointed because there wasn't any money in the feds for the Fed. There was no money for it. It was all going into Minnesota Care, and they still did not want us to let that go. So here we are again. It still is in statute, in Minnesota statute, and we are in the process again of circumventing and going back to the federal government so that we can have Minnesota Care for farmers. Wisconsin does something like this, I think it's a really good bill. A lot of farmers out there, when they get a loan, many times those loans come with a tag of you have to have health care, and in most cases these farmers are doing $20,000 or $10,000 and there's no money in it. So if they do get sick and it's a catastrophe, it can actually damage the whole
farm situation. So,
yeah. Well, Representative Moore, I understand you're the first.
Well, the chair, I arm wrestled with Representative Otremba to see who would get to carry this bill. She beat me, so she is the the chief author. But
for some reason, I don't doubt that.
you shouldn't. But I think graciously she's allowed me to at least talk about why this is an important bill. In 2007, members, we did pass the bill, House File 276. House File 276 would have allowed our farmers to not have to include depreciation amounts in calculating eligibility for Minnesota Care. Unfortunately, though, what we needed to do was to get a waiver from the federal government in order to be able to do this. After the bill was passed, and after, in 2007, we appropriated money, the APHIS has received the funds to allow the 2,100 or so farmers to be eligible for Minnesota Care. Well, we found out on November 5th, 2008, that the federal government wouldn't grant us the waiver we needed in order to make this change. And it all involves calculating eligibility for Minnesota Care for farmers and whether depreciation amounts that have been taken off their income have to be added back to their income to determine eligibility.
And I want to just add, too, that we already have a federal F with our property, when we're doing our taxes, and we do it through, if you are on Medicaid, you use the Schedule F, food stamps, Schedule F, FAFSA, Federal F. And they still would not do, even though this is a precedent that that's happened forever. All my kids have done it too, and you, and a lot of you, other than all of us. So I think it was there's a piece out there that a lot of people that aren't farmers, aren't rural, they think that farmers are all really rich. And that's my kind of take on it. They see all the kind of money that they think are coming out of FSA and all that, and I think that was a piece, because it made no sense at all for me for the feds to say no. And
Do you want to go next, or do you want to have some questions? We've got a couple of questions for you. Let's do the questions next. Representative Hamilton.
Yeah. Just a quick one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morrow, my question was, why did the federal government deny it? And did it have to do with the depreciation piece?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, I can't speak because I don't know why the federal government reached that decision. There may be others at the table here who do know. I don't know that specifically.
Representative Hamilton, I've looked, and I can find nothing. And we tried again to find out what was happening. Nothing. I have no clue why they wouldn't be giving me a waiver.
And Representative Hamilton, we haven't heard from DHS why that waiver request was denied.
Okay. Representative Verdo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morrow, you threw up number 2,100. I'm just wondering on numbers here, how many farmers, if you know how many of them are on Minnesota Care, and if that 2,100, is that an additional number, or can you help me out with that, please?
Mr. Chair, Representative Verdell, my understanding is the 2,100 is an additional 2,100. I don't, though, Representative Verdell, have the number of farmers currently on Minnesota Care.
Go ahead, Representative.
And we know that some of the farmers that are on Minnesota Care would actually, their premiums would go down. So.
Okay, thanks. Okay, any other questions? If not, Mr. Peterson, for the tape, please state your name and who you're representing, please.
Thank you, excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and also to Madam Chair. My name is Doug Peterson. I'm president of the Minnesota Farmers Union, and I'm here today to testify in favor of House File 280 authored by Chairperson Representative Mary Ellen Otremba. This would basically ask the DHS to resubmit for federal approval the request for elimination of depreciation add back for self-employed farmers that would modify the definition of income for self-employed farmers that wish to enroll in MinCare. So basically the depreciation issue. So
where the Minnesota Farmers Union health care policy is always a top issue. Farmers receive health care through many options, and many of them are unaffordable due to unsteady income levels that come with the unpredictable nature of farming. Minnesota Farmers Union is concerned about the number of farmers that have high deductibles and also catastrophic coverages for insurances with high premiums. And this is a very big growing and a very large growing concern for beginning farmers, and it really hits dairy farmers quite dramatically. Minnesota Care is by no means a perfect program, but for many farmers, it has been an option that has worked. And Minnesota Farmers Union also sees that mainly younger dairy farmers with families and beginning niche farmers have this to be an issue for them also. The availability of health insurance is terribly important if you're going to continue to be on the farm. We have been supportive of this legislation for many years. The legislature overwhelmingly supported this legislation in 2007. They passed the waiver request, and the governor signed, only to have the two previous administrations deny the request in August of 2008. Now we have a new administration and policies, and MFU believes this is the right time to do this waiver once again. Because of the capital-intensive nature of farming, depreciation is a real issue for farmers who buy new tractors, and as soon as you take it off the lot, of course, you know what happens. They depreciate the minute you buy them in most cases. The items that we are looking at that began for agriculture depreciation are not limited to, but breeding stock, perennial crop development such as vineyards and orchards, machinery and equipment, building and real estate improvements. In conclusion, if this bill would pass, it would help a lot of farmers buy affordable health care, and we would really appreciate your consideration as a organization. And just one side note, Mr. Chair and committee members, we have sent several letters to our congressional delegation urging that the waiver be taken from the bottom of the pile and put on the top of the pile to be signed, and we have never received one response from that. So we're a little disappointed in the action. We feel that this is a step in the right direction for health care for those people in rural Minnesota. Appreciate your consideration on it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson. Are there any questions for either the authors or Mr. Peterson? If not, is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill? If not, Representative Tremblay renews her motion that House File 280 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion carries. And since there is no other business, we can adjourn. If there's no other business, we will stand adjourned.